the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on your web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site that covers your Arizona Cardinals. In episode 505, this is the review show of the Cardinals' season-ending loss to the Seattle Seahawks 21-20. With me is co-host Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, and one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. Guys, get on that podcast if you haven't. Sign up for the Patreon, because now it's when that content is bopping. If you weren't before, you can get you that way. You can access all the old shows. But, of course, this is a big year for the Cardinals draft. Again, you're going to want to know it all. Join Seth and Justin Higdon on that show over there. I give shameless plugs, because guess what? This is the time of year when I catch up on all of Seth's shows and get ready for the draft. So when we talk draft, I kind of know what I'm talking about, because I don't really know what I'm talking about when it comes to the draft. I hope you guys know that.
And there's a lot of people to know, and it makes it hard.
Well, right, and when you got six picks in the top 100, you're like, okay, we got to know a lot of players. You have to know a lot of players.
Yeah, it's gonna be a fun off season. I mean, this is the first time I can remember, probably since that 2013 season, where the off season was so excited, right? Like, obviously the 2014 season, the off season was lamented as, you know, what could have been without the injuries. The 2015 season, everybody was excited. And then we've always talked about that 2015 to 2016, that 2016 off season was very odd, because it almost felt like desperate, not in the sense of they were like, were doing desperate things, but like they knew that the window was closing.
Yeah, that's absolutely what was happening, is that the window was coming to a close. Carson was, you know, like they knew.
And so it just had a different feeling. This is, I mean, genuinely since 2013, this is the first time. And you know, that it's crazy to say that, because it's crazy to think, one, that was a decade ago, right?
Yeah, but, we old.
So. Yeah, but the crazy thing is like, this is the first time since that time where you went into the offseason, you didn't make the playoffs, and you thought they're headed in the right direction. And that's the first time that you felt that way, where it wasn't like they're headed in the right direction, but type of, you know, you're putting that in there.
Right. Because of last offseason with Monty Austin Fort, you don't wonder like, oh, it's an important season, but what will time do? Yeah. But That's what we have much more of the offseason to talk about. In fact, we will continue to shoot for multiple shows as we started last offseason, trying to give you more content, maybe shorter shows more often. And that's kind of what. So we're going to talk about basically three things, and it's mainly about the game. We will delve into offseason topics in our future shows, so you don't have to listen to an hour and a half each time. We will talk about the Cardinals' loss and react to that, to the Seahawks. Talk about Kyler Murray specifically and his performance over the last three games. And then, as Seth was talking optimism, we will talk about just how optimistic we are for the future and this offseason, because for a 4-13 team, they were like, after the game, was crazy how, like, the vibe. That maybe, you know, maybe that vibe is just because, I don't know why, but, you know, Gannon was all jacked up, the team's all jacked up, the media's like, hey, this team's gonna be good. The Kyler's plays got everyone jacked up. So let's talk about the game, which was, dadgummit, it was both disappointing and satisfying, right? It looks like they lose the game 21-20. But again, that's a game they should have won. They had twice in the last 3 minutes twice in the last 3 minutes to either put the game away or win the game. Matt Prater, as my son Diego liked to say, as he was at the game with his buddy and put on his Snap story, Prater had the script. And he misses a 41-yarder wide right, which would have put the Cardinals up by 10 and basically sealed a victory. The Seahawks would have had to score twice in the final 3 minutes. And he missed it. So they go down, of course. They score a touchdown, of course. They get the two-point conversion, of course, to take the lead. And then promptly, well, Kyler's been doing what he's done. And he takes them on what should be a game-winning drive as time expires. Matt Prater, 51-yarder. It's been nails from basically everywhere. And honestly, this might be one of the first. I'll have to look back because I remember the stat. He was dang near perfect, I believe, in his career in game-winning field goals with under 2 minutes left in the game. I believe that. Ooh, I need to pull that up because I believe. I didn't think about that, but because I've heard the clutch. He's, I think, the most clutch kicker, maybe here, Justin Tucker, in NFL history when it comes to game-winning kicks, and he missed one. And the reward was the fourth pick instead of the fifth pick because the Cardinals got a little bit of help. Not that the fifth pick would have been bad, but it was. This is kind of what we wanted, like against the Eagles, right? Like we loved how that felt, winning and beating the Eagles. It's something you can build upon. It gives, you know, builds the cachet that you need for the head coach and the quarterback. But you got the game-winning drive without the game winner, and it wasn't because of a mistake by the quarterback or coach. It was the kicker. And then you still maintain your draft status. We kind of, like, honestly, it would have been perfect if that would have happened against Philadelphia last week and Seattle this week, and they'd still be sitting at the number two pick overall, right?
Yeah, and it's interesting because you think about it, and the whole vibe, like you said, the vibe wasn't that they lost the game, and they did. I mean, there's no other way around it. It goes into the record books as a loss, but I mean, at the end of the season, nobody's going to look at it and go, well, you know, 5-12 versus 4-13. Like, what's the, you know, nobody really would have thought about it that way. Instead, the vibe was, we're the better team. Like, the Cardinals are the better team with far less talent on probably both sides of the ball, but at least the defensive side of the ball, right? And they're better prepared. They're better coach, they were in better situations to be successful than, you know, and you know, we can mention this obviously in what was, now that we know, the last game Pete Carroll was going to be on the sideline for the Seattle Seahawks, and he's been a thorn in the side of the Arizona Cardinals for 14 years. I mean, every coach has a losing record to him. You know, in those 14 seasons, the Cardinals have had five different coaches. You know, they're 18-9-1 against him head to head. The closest was Bruce Arians at 5-4-1 to having a, you know, even a non-losing record. And it's just, you know, it's a frustrating thing. And so I think it's twofold. One, you know, it's bittersweet that he leaves again on another kind of fluky win. But two, I feel like, and maybe again, this is just vibes, I feel like the Cardinals, their fans, the team seemed in much better spirits coming out of that game than Seattle. And realistically, even though Seattle won on the scoreboard, they lost because they didn't make the playoffs. So like the game in and of itself didn't even matter for them. And so what they've done potentially, and this is, you know, obviously this is broad picture stuff, but they may have won a meaningless game that in turn gives the Cardinals a player like Marvin Harrison Jr. for the next, you know, however long. And then they lost their coach who, you know, if you go back to the overall history of the Cardinals and Seahawks, it's a pretty even thing. In fact, I think the Cardinals had a slight edge until Pete Carroll came into play. And so
even up until recently, because the Seahawks have won the last five games. The Seahawks are now five games over 500 against the Cardinals all time.
Right. And so it's like this really interesting kind of juxtaposition about, you know, did you win the battle to lose the war? Obviously something we won't know for years to come, but like if the Cardinals can sit at four now and they end up with Marvin Harrison Jr. because you won a game in January that had no, I mean, at that point, they had already known that they were eliminated from the playoffs. And I get you want to send Pete out with, you know, maybe they knew deep down that he wasn't coming back, blah, blah, blah. But it's just an interesting juxtaposition, because coming out of that game, even though there's a zero doubt of what the scoreboard read, I don't feel like anybody on the Arizona side is like, oh shucks, they lost that game. It's more like the Cardinals are the better team. They're probably set up better for the near term and based on how they handle this offseason, potentially the long term.
Yeah, and we look at how the game went. It was turnoverless on both sides, which like if you look over the last 10 games then, that the last final 10 games of the season for the Seahawks, that was the winning thing. If they turned the ball over, they lost. If they turned the ball over, they lost. If they didn't turn all over the ball, they won. That's how that went over the last 10 games. The four games in which they did not turn the ball over, they won. The six games where they turned the ball over, they lost. You know, we look at the numbers, and it time of possession, again, was kind of key. So there wasn't anything the Cardinals were doing defensively that was all that special, because they gained their yards per play was just about half a yard, about half a yard less than the Cardinals. Cardinals averaged 6.8 yards per play, the Seahawks 6.2. The Seahawks were better on third down. They were 6 for 12. The difference was they punted two more times, and they just didn't have the ball as much because the Cardinals controlled the ball. You know, we kind of joked about the fact that, you know, they needed to possess the ball 40 minutes for them to be able to beat the Seahawks. They got 36 minutes, and what'd they do? They ended up losing.
That's what it was. You're right. They weren't able to control that clock on that final drive.
They just, it was, you know, came down to the one drive that after they missed the field goal to go up by 10, it was the defense failed. The defense failed. Geno Smith took them down the field, and that was that. I mean, but that, like, we have expected, honestly, nothing less from this defense. They were not any different than what they have been all year. This defense has never been one. This is over the last 2-3 years. They've never been able to get a stop when they need it.
No, and the only surprise coming from this game, or the surprise occurrence or outcome of this game, was Matt Prater. I mean, literally nothing else was off script from what we've seen, you know, this year, or at least the last, you know, especially 3 weeks of Kyler in the offense. But, you know, for the most part, this whole season with Kyler and just the, I mean, again, broad numbers and you know, you can dive down deep and tell whatever story you want to tell with all these numbers. But, you know, the whole thing, right? 24 first downs for the Cardinals, 206 rushing yards for the Cardinals, 262 passing yards for the Cardinals, right? I mean, 466 total yards to 327 total yards. Just absurd. I think the other thing the Cardinals had that hurt them, you know, they obviously had the five penalties. The Seahawks had no penalties in the game, which is absurd in and of itself.
Oh, my gosh, I totally did not know that. Wow. No penalties. No kidding. I guess I realized that, but they never got flagged. But that's crazy. And it's not – the Cardinals had 27 penalty yards. That's it, 27.
Yeah, it wasn't undisciplined football in the least. I mean, and you look at it, they were basically – the Seahawks slightly better on – third down, 6 of 12 versus 5 of 13 for the Cardinals. But two for two on fourth down, you hit it. 24 to 36 time of possession. again, I'm going to lament this, and I mean this in a super positive way. I don't think that's a sustainable thing. Would you agree with that? Like, I just don't see a way a team's going to be. I mean, even if you take it down again and you say 35 to 25, I mean, maybe 5 games a year you can do that. Maybe. But, like, you're not going to do that. I mean, obviously not 17 games.
No,
year,
no.
If you're an 11 or 12 win football team, you're not going to, I mean, that's not going to be every, like, no. I can't fathom that it's because
they were facing two teams with really bad run defenses. And what do the Cardinals do? They don't play with tempo. This is a team that doesn't play with tempo. It's a traditional, like, you know, let's be honest, this is a traditional 3-4, like traditional West Coast offense that has modern elements to it, and they don't believe, like obviously they don't play with pace when they don't have to, and that plays to their strengths because they run the ball really well, and it just played out really well against Philadelphia and against Seattle simply because, as we knew going into it, their run defense had been bad. And the Cardinals run the ball well, and that's basically it. And so they're able to sustain drives doing that. And honestly, the Cardinals, over the last 3 games, you feel like they've really kind of hit with Kyler. They've gotten to a place where they're pretty efficient offensively. I don't know if they're going to look the same next year offensively in terms of game plan, but. Because I still think that they want more from the quarterback position. And, yeah, it's just James Conner put on a clinic late in the year, and they were playing teams that struggled defensively, you know, Pittsburgh, Seattle, Philadelphia, and then you had the Chicago Bears, and they weren't able to run the ball nearly with the same success. And what did they do? They couldn't keep up.
Well, and outside of the red zone – issues in this game, something that we highlighted last week, and I think it again showed itself. I mean, I don't know if you could ask for a much better game from Kyler in general. I mean, 22 of 30, 262 yards passing. The one touchdown is obviously the blemish is a strong word, but, you know, to only have one touchdown and three inside the, I think it was inside the 5 possessions, and they only get one touchdown out of it. It's, you know, not ideal. And that is, I go back to those stats that we talked about last week. I think that is where they need a big play merchant in the red zone area. They need a Marvin Harrison Jr. They need a difference maker in that area. If they're really going to change.
And Trey McBride might be that guy, but you need a couple. Because you need a secondary threats too.
Oh, yeah.
You need secondary threats as well. There was a lot. So offensively, it's just you like what it was offensively. Kyler played really well.
His efficiency, it's been so the last 2 games. So this is what's tough. And, you know, we talked a little bit about the fact that he doesn't throw as many touchdowns as other quarterbacks. So, you know, sometimes people are like, oh, you know, he does, but he has the rushing touchdowns as well. But the thing that I saw this season, his touchdown percentage was actually amongst the lowest of his career. It wasn't great. In his interception percentage was low. That was good, but it was other things that made him, you know, look better and like he was getting more comfortable. And those things, I think, are going to be what creates, you know, his next portion of his career, or what makes him, you know, the guy moving forward, because you're starting to see, and you mentioned it, just what he allows other people to do. And the big one, obviously the big beneficiary of him is James Conner, right? Like Conner is at least a Pro Bowler if he plays what, 15 games this year, you think?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, he hit that. That's the other thing is he was a monster. Like, you know, cashed in that bet for, I took the over, laddered him at 80, and then I just threw they had one on DraftKings for plus, for 110 plus, it was plus 360. I'm like, why the crap not? Why the heck not? Just to see if he gets to that 1,000. He blew it away. That was really good. That was really good. But he was so good. And yeah, if you look at his production since he came back, and is it the chicken or the egg? Does the running game that Conner has help Kyler? Or does the Kyler, the quarterback, make him that much better a runner? Or it simply might be, hey, it's both. It's both all at the same time. Like, you couldn't separate Bill Belichick and Tom Brady in terms of their success, what they're at New England. That might be that perfect level of synergy offensively is the type of player that James Conner is. Like, he's not a carry the franchise back, but he is near elite. Like, within player circles, he will get some of the same respect as some of the absolute top backs in the NFL when he's playing alongside Kyler Murray.
Yeah, and, you know, he brings a toughness that we all know about, but it's his ability to kind of grind games away. And it was a really interesting thing. And I laddered up to 125 on him. So it was a good day with that. And unfortunately, Kenneth Walker didn't hold up his end of the bargain. But that's the juxtaposition that I was going to mention is, you know, it wasn't like Conner was not running well early in the game. It just wasn't. I mean, you'd watch Kenneth Walker be 8-yard game, 12-yard game, you know.
In the second half, holy cow.
Yeah, he couldn't do anything. And meanwhile, then you've got Conner who's gaining 8 yards, 10 yards, 12 yards, you know, 29-yard touchdown and things like that. And you look at it and you go, oh, that's the difference. And I don't think anybody, you and I included, would say that, you know, James Conner's just head and shoulders above Kenneth Walker. You know, he's probably a better running back right now just from his time in the NFL, understanding of how to play a full season, you know, how to play throughout a game, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, Kenneth Walker is a straight up freak of nature as a runner. And yet this dude, James Conner, just made it look like they were playing two different sports by the end of the game.
It was.
And that's the crazy thing to me about it is that it just seems like he's starting to kind of find his way in this offense in the NFL. And it just feels like you said the perfect kind of marriage of what they need.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Zero podcast, Mr. Cardinal Talk on the web. Let's move on to Kyler Murray's play, especially over the last three games. Just how exciting that's going to be. That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the web. Let's delve into the Kyler Murray numbers. Overall this season, his numbers, if you look at, you know, from start to finish in those eight games, granted, they, you know, we like what we saw in terms of how the offense looked. But in eight games, he had a fairly pedestrian season from game 10 to game 17 in terms of where he stands as, you know, because we believe he's a star or as near to, like, he can be a top guy. We've seen the ceiling. It's as good as anybody in the NFL. But you look at the volume numbers for the eight games he played, 65.7% completion percentage. That's fine. Nearly 17,899, 10 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. His yards per attempt, 6.7, which was lower than his – it was higher than last season, but it was lower than even his rookie season. His touchdown percentage is equal to his rookie season, a tick higher from the 3.6% that it was last season, which we knew was a disappointment. His interception percentage, 1.9%, mirrored last year, lower than his 2021 year, which was great. And which, by that way, I'll have to look at that, but 1.9% might be a record low. If he threw enough passes, might be a record low for the Cardinals. If you look at, you know, his success percentage for first downs, it matched his rookie season. So basically what we saw coming off an injury was playing roughly at the same level as he was as a rookie in a new offense. His passer rating was 89.4. It's very, those are all very, they're nice. They're okay. You're going to win games with that, but he certainly, that his numbers were not statistically special. However, if you look at his last three games, you had a much better look at that. Whereas he completed 71, nearly 72% of his passes over the last three games, 724 yards passing. So if you break that down per game, you know, 724 divided by 3. So he averaged 240 yards passing per game. His yards per attempt was up to 7.3. That's top level. That's very good level. 7.3 yards per attempt, which is, you know, more than half a yard higher than his season average, with 6 touchdowns, 1 interception, and that 1 interception was a stupidity on, that was a miscommunication. It wasn't a bad throw. It wasn't a bad decision. Somebody, like Michael Wilson, missed up on the communication there. 6 touchdown passes over his last 3 games, that sort of production, and a passer rate of 108. And that is top end quarterback. And that was him playing. You see those numbers, and he himself, it wasn't, you were watching him, and he was not taking over a game. That was just being an efficient leader and passer. They weren't volume numbers, because we've seen him dominate games before in other ways, and he put up those numbers in the last 3 games without being dominant.
Yeah, without needing to be dominant too, which is nice. And you know, that goes back to a couple of things. I think the first one being, you know, him growing in that offense. You know, 5 games, you can't throw them out, you can't do anything like that, but you have to take everything with a grain of salt, right? Obviously, I don't think people, and I know he had a 3-week practice window, but like, I don't think people realize how little he did with the first team in those 3 weeks. And then from there, it was basically like, you know, he was getting his training camp, he was getting his preseason, like, and so 5 games kind of coincides with probably being about, so, you know, if you include that's 8 weeks, that's a little more than what training camp and preseason and everything normally is, right? Usually it's about 6 to 7 weeks. And so for him to take that time, especially coming off an injury and kind of get back to that, I think that was the biggest thing. And you have to remember too, is it wasn't like he was coming back to anything familiar. It was coming back to a brand new offense, a brand new system, terminology, you know, simple things of, you know, he had to switch which foot he had up in shotgun formation. Obviously taking more snaps under center, working on ball handling, something that he was incredibly adept at the end, right? I mean, he became kind of a wizard with it.
His play fake looks so good.
Yeah, and so
he's doing things that we've seen other elite quarterbacks do. He's ball faking with the other hand. He's hiding the ball very well. The way he goes, and we're seeing things that, you know, high-end Aaron Rodgers type things, where the way he's able to hide the ball on play fakes. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's getting to the point where it's exciting, and you feel like it's what you've been waiting to see, and you know, you want to see the growth, and you want to see this continue. You know, and that'll be what's interesting, because I think for the most part, one of the things that we've been kind of waiting for is how this will all play out. You know, obviously, as fans, you want this to work out, but you know, you also understand that the business of it, and is he the guy, and things of that nature. And I think, I mean, we would agree through the first, you know, four or five games, it was a lot like, you know, there was no answer one way or the other. Like, he wasn't awful where you're like, it's, you got to move on. And he wasn't good enough where you're like, there's zero doubt. Like, if you have a chance to upgrade, you don't do it. Right. Or, you know, I guess you would say, could you upgrade? Right. That would make more sense. Like, would you be able to upgrade? And so those last three games for him to play at that level, it's like, who are you going to get? Like, who, yeah. What quarterbacks are you going to get that can play? And people might say, oh, well, look at who he played.
Well, and also, but look at who his pass catchers are. Trey McBride and running backs.
Yeah, and he was doing that. Finally.
Yeah, and Michael Wilson finally kind of found his spot. Maybe it was finally getting on the same page as Kyler. They finally found a rhythm. Wilson looked good. Dortch a little bit. But when your top receivers are a third-round rookie and Greg Dortch, and he's doing that, that type of efficiency, that's fantastic.
Right. And even Dortch, right? Like, we're all very big fans, and we like what he brings. And you look at his game overall, right? There are some very highs, but like, you look at this last game, right? He had a chance early. He caught a crosser and it wasn't able to break loose of Devin Witherspoon, and they ended up short on a third, and I think it was six, and he gained five or whatever it was. And you're like, that's just, those are just the things that these guys are. Like, it doesn't mean they're bad. It just means that they lack that next ability. Like, all of these guys can make elite plays at times, but it's how often they can make routine plays that is what makes them great. And so, you know, for a guy like Dortch, he's a highlight reel, but he's not a guy that makes the routine. You know, Rondell's kind of the same way, right? Like, you look at what Rondell did, and he had a great play in this game where he caught the ball 4 yards short and then powered through three tacklers to get a first down. And you're like, okay, where's that consistently? And again, the reason Rondell hasn't been good isn't because of his, he lacks the ability to do that. It's that he lacks that ability consistently. Like, he'll drop the ball. I mean, that one, it was a little bit low, but Kyler hit him in stride, and he drops the ball. And so instead of catching and running with nobody around him, it's a drop. And it's like, you're not going to, like, not every ball is going to be perfect. You have to be able to make a play like that in that situation, in that moment. And, you know, in the end, it didn't cost them the game. They put themselves in a position to win anyways. But those are the little things that you look back at and you say, hey, 262 yards was great. And it probably should have been, you know, 280, 290, 300 yards. And those are the things that you look at for those. And you know, to get a guy like Elijah Higgins that looks like he could be a competent NFL, you know, target now. And you remember, I mean, we joked about the other day that, you know, if it wasn't for Trey McBride, we'd be going into this offseason with like, oh, Elijah Higgins, that's the guy, right? Like,
he would have been finally, Dan Arnold, Ricky Seals Jones.
Right. We finally don't have to do that. We can be like, oh, Elijah Higgins.
He's a nice other tight end.
Right. He's a nice second, third tight end type option. Like, that's a great guy to have. you know, when you look at it, there's still a lot of kinks to work out. I think, you know, their offensive line lacks the athleticism overall. And mainly that's probably Wilkinson, Beecham, and Hernandez to be great in the screen game. I think Roholt and Paris Johnson can do it, but I just don't know if those other guys have the lateral athleticism to do it consistently. But they ran a couple screens in this game and got, you know, 8-10 yards out of them. They're still not a great screen team by any mean. And
if you saw the graphic that was out there, right, on Twitter, they are literally the worst screen team in the NFL.
And I'd love to see the difference now with Kyler too, right? Because I wonder how much worse they were before he got back, right? But you know, you're seeing this team and this group kind of take that next step, and they're still missing pieces. Whereas, you know, as we'll talk about throughout the offseason, the defense was so bad that you're like, I don't know where to start. With the offense, you can identify the issues, and this all goes back to the Kyler conversation. One of the issues that, or one of the things that's not an issue, is the quarterback, and that was the goal of those 8 games. It would have been better if they were 4-4 or 5-3, and they should have been. Like, quite frankly, they should have been. But the goal wasn't to win 5 games. The goal wasn't to win 4 games. The goal was to decide and figure out if you had a guy that you can win with and if he was going to buy into the system. And it looks like from especially the last 3 games, but from those 8 games, you absolutely do. I mean, I put the poll on my site today, and we'll find out what the results are on Friday. But it's interesting because if you look at Kyler and he comes in unscathed from the offseason, obviously all the changes happen, but he has the full offseason. He has the full training camp, the full, you know, OTAs and preseason, and he gets all his reps in and everything. They're not a playoff team. I'm not going to be like, oh, they're a playoff team. Their defense was just too bad. But I think you see, you know, another 3-4 wins, and they're a 7-8 win team. And based on, especially early, if you flip a couple of those, you know, Commanders Giants games to wins,
and they'd be sitting at 3-0 to start the year.
Right. And you look at it and you go, now all of a sudden vibes are different. Like we're talking about, like everything's kind of different. And maybe you play above your skis, or, you know, you play above your weight class in on defense a little more consistently. And maybe you are able to play. I mean, you can't play through ACLs. You can't play through the thing, you know, bicep tears, but maybe those injuries don't happen or situations don't happen, and, you know, things change and are different. But, you know, even if you say like, oh, they're a 7-10 team, nobody saw that this year. Nobody. And the fact that they probably are a 7-win team or an 8-win team if he plays the whole season, that just tells you that, again, with the lack of talent that they have, well, what they accomplished, that they're heading in the right direction.
Absolutely. Coming next on the Rise of Spirit podcast, Mr. Irv Cardinals Talk on the web. The vibes. I'm too old to talk about vibes, but we're going to talk about them anyway. It's feeling optimistic for a team that was not as good as – was even lower than the win projections. The vibes are good. We'll talk about that. Coming next on the Rise of Spirit podcast. We're back on the Rise of Spirit podcast, Mr. Irv Cardinals Talk on the web. One final segment. Optimism abounds. I don't know if it was the last 2 games or whatnot. Jonathan Gannon speaking with conviction after the game about what he believes this team is going to be, a team that's playing meaningful games in December and January, meaning that deep into January, suggesting they'll be a playoff team. Kyler saying this is the favorite. He thinks this is probably the favorite group of guys, the favorite team he's been on since being in the NFL. He only played half a season, you know. It feels like the talking to players after the game, and media-wise, at least locally, there's good vibes there as well, because Kyler looks like Kyler. you've taken that doubt out of the way about, you know, Gannon has said he's a friendly heart. Have you seen the tape? And yeah, but like it's hard not to be optimistic about this because of the cap space, some of the flexibility they have in the offseason, because of the draft picks, because I think it probably comes down to this: Kyler Murray plus Trey McBride plus James Conner. And then if you look at a defense, well, you can't be that bad again, can you? They were terrible. You can't be as bad as you were this year.
You can always be worse. We know it can always be worse. But technically, you can't be worse than the worst already. So, I mean, I guess you can be worse than you were. But I have a heart. Like I said, man, like, that was one of the most baffling stats that the Cardinals sent out. And you know, we can lament a lot of the things, decisions, whatever, before and after the season. But the one thing that really kind of stood out to me, the thing that was crazy to me overall, was that their final three or the starters on the defensive line weren't even on the roster. Like, that's genuinely, like, that's baffling. I've never heard of anything like that. Like, I've just never seen anything like what we saw this year.
We've seen them get decimated on the offensive line, but those were like nagging things throughout the year. The fact that you had season ender for Collier, season ender for Watkins, Ledbetter, and we didn't know this until after the fact, that with the injury, we find out just a couple days ago that he tore his ACL. Kevin Strong, strangely released. You know, that maybe they were looking for that stat in the end. They're like, we had all our defensive linemen. Our starting three weren't even on the roster. You know, Dante Stills gets hurt. Lecky Fotu spends a chunk of the season on injured reserve. It's, you know, and that was the problem, is the fact that that particular unit, as lean in talent as it was, that was the group where you're like, they had no depth anyway, and they took all the hits.
Yeah, and that's what we said. Kind of, you know, with the Kyler situation, right? You wanted to see what you had. You knew it wasn't. You knew that you have to address it, especially for defensive line. You need the depth, right? But you want to say, like, hey, LJ Collier, are you a starter or a depth guy? Like, could you be one of those things on this roster? Carlos Watkins, same thing. And to not even get, like, the ability to evaluate them.
Was it one game for Collier, and then two games later it was Watkins? It was stupid.
Right.
It was stupid.
And so it just makes it, like, you're just like, I don't even know where to begin. And so, like, that's the crazy thing with this whole thing, is, like, the offense has building blocks, and you can see the vision, and the vision itself kind of played out. Like you said, I don't know if it's going to be sexy. I don't know if we're going to be like, oh man, super excited to have the highest scoring offense in the NFL. I don't think that's what you're going to see. Now, we could see a scenario where the Cardinals have the top rushing offense in the NFL, and that would be kind of cool, right? That'd be a different vibe for this team. Especially if their number one receiver is a rookie. Like, you're like, yeah, hey, we're not gonna put too much, don't worry, we've got this figured out, we've got these three guys right here that are each gonna run for like over 800 yards. It's not gonna be, it'll be cool. You won't have to do a whole lot, Marvin Harrison Jr., don't worry. But the whole thing is, like, you know, or know is a strong word, but you feel like you see what the vision is for the offense. We really have no idea on defense. We're just kind of like, well, we'll see. But that's the thing too, is like, sometimes, like we said, it can't get worse than the worst. So sometimes it's kind of interesting to look at in general, and you're like, all right, what's the next step? Like, how do they go about this?
So I think what it comes down to is this, is the reason why there's optimism with this team. I think it comes down to kind of three or four things. One is right now it feels like there's high level of confidence in general manager Monty Austin Ford with what he did with the draft last year, the draft capital he has this year, the way that the rookies were able to contribute. And so you've got the general manager, you feel you've got the right guy in the front office, and you feel like you've got the right head coach and coaching staff. The feeling about Kyler, you feel like you feel confident about Kyler moving forward, and then you've got a couple of pieces. And so that in itself is like what you, it feels like the plan is going, the script is going as according to plan. They are following the script where they're going to be terrible this year, but promising late in the season. And then they've got cap space, they've got draft capital. And with that, so that's kind of what you want to do. And I think that's what builds into that optimism. Now, does it have to play out? Absolute, because remember 10 years ago, the confidence that everyone had in Steve Keim, because there was in Keim we trust. We went from in Wiz we trust to in Keim we trust, in Bruce we trust. And that trust goes away quickly. But at least this initial draft class, and we'll break down the rookie class later in future shows, they were cut contributions early. This feels, if we're talking about vibes, if we go back, for those of you who are old enough to remember the first Denny Green years when they had, you know, you had Larry Fitzgerald, Anquan Boldin, you had Carlos Dansby, and Darnell Dockett. And they played a lot early. And that eventually built into what was their division titles and their Super Bowl run, because those guys became very good. You've got a Paris Johnson who people are gushing about, okay? You've got teammates absolutely gushing about. And so that we'll talk more about that later in other shows. You've got, I don't know about B.J. Ojulari. I didn't really get bet, but Michael Wilson looks like he could be good. Garrett Williams was fantastic. Dante Stills was proved to be capable. And so from top to bottom in the draft, they were getting contributions. And so as long as Austin Fort can continue to show promise and hit on picks like it appears he has this year, I think that's what we need moving forward. But I think ultimately the optimism comes down to the building blocks for a successful building forward positive competitive franchise. You need to have the right guy in the front office. You need to have the right guy to help coach. You need the right vibes with the quarterback, with the head coach. You need the talented quarterback, and you need some pieces that are weapons. And that appears that they have some of those in place. At least the GM, the coach, the quarterback, and at least one of the weapons in Trey McBride looks like he's a legit star or star in the making, minding that he stays healthy. Like, he could be every bit as impactful as the Mark Andrews and the George Kittles and the Travis, like, I'm not saying he's going to put up Hall of Fame numbers, but like TJ Hawkinson, Sam LaPorta, that sort of thing that you got. And so it's just it's hard not to be optimistic, especially with it shifted so quickly from bad, terrible, blah, blah. Oh, this offseason, it's like on a flip of a switch, everyone forgot the vibes early in the season. And then we're like, okay, we're ready. And maybe it was just simply that for the last year, we knew that we were waiting for right now.
Yeah, and I mean, that was the thing. Is it's hard to get through a season that you know. I mean, you come in and you're told that you're the worst team in the NFL, right? And not just that, but you're going to be the worst team in the NFL, and there's really no hope. And, you know, it doesn't matter if Kyler plays or not. He's not the guy, blah, blah, blah. And so for it to come out and then kind of be not that, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, this team's not bad. Yeah, they lack talent, but they come prepared and things of that nature. And you look at it, that was the biggest thing. And what Austin Fort needs to do, and what, you know, you kind of highlighted it, and is that he needs to stack draft classes. And you kind of go back, and You mentioned it, obviously, Fitzgerald, Dansby, Dockett. I don't know if we'll ever see something to that level again. That was, you know, I mean, you throw in Antonio Smith in there being a guy that was a Pro Bowler as well. And you, I mean, you, four of your first five draft picks were Pro Bowlers. Like, that's probably unheard of. But what they need to do, and the biggest thing that neither Denny Green or Steve Keim, and I know Green was technically not the GM, but let's be honest, he was basically the GM. But the thing that Denny never did, or Steve Keim never did, was stack draft classes. And what I mean by that is, you look at, obviously, that first class of Fitzgerald, Dansby, Dockett. That next class, they had the eighth pick, and they took Anthony Roll, who ended up being a very nice player in the NFL, don't get me wrong. But from there, it was J.J. Arrington, who was a bust. Eric Green, who was a bust. Daryl Blackstock, who was a bust. You know, and then the next year, obviously, it goes to Wisenhunt, and we I don't think any of us would be like, oh yeah, the Wisenhunt era was highly successful for drafts. The thing the Wisenhunt era did was piece, like they hit on pieces that they were missing, right? Like, so as much as everybody hated him, Levi Brown, right? He ended up being a decent tackle in the NFL. Obviously, Calais, who's still around and still a high-end player in the NFL. I would love to say Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, but they traded him, obviously. You know, Rashad Johnson ended up being a nice player in the NFL. Obviously, Big Dan and Darryl Washington, that had the making of being a special group, but, you know, Darryl decided to do his own thing. But then you go, you know, you go to Keim. And he had a... You know, for all the faults, he had a decent first draft class. Mentor, Matthew, Alex Okafor was a good player. Stephon Taylor and Andre Ellington both had nice careers. Earl Watford was a starter that they picked up in the fourth round. That, not a bad one, but it was, you know. And then the next year, Deion Buchanan was fine, and then John Brown was obviously an anomaly. That was a nice pick, but they just were never able to stack the draft classes. Then they had obviously the Humphreys Golden Johnson class, which was really nice. And then obviously the 2016 class that we just don't even talk about. Right. But, and that's what Monty needs to avoid. He needs to avoid the next class, because again, this one looks bright, and maybe it's bright because these guys were forced to play and you know, they just weren't actually as good as we think they are, blah, blah, blah. But it looks bright. It looks, coming out of the season, you're more excited than you were going into the season with what you saw. You're like, hey, this Paris Johnson guy could be a very good player. You know, obviously you want to see more from B.J. Ojulari, but he looks like a guy that can play. Obviously, Michael Wilson looks like a guy that could be a potential wide receiver three. Maybe he creeps into being a wide receiver two. You know, those type of things. They're all important. Garrett Williams was an anomaly when he was able to stay healthy and play. That's going to be something to watch, obviously, is can he stay healthy? But you can't have your next one end up being, you know, Beanie Wells and Cody Brown as your top two picks, and you're like, oh shucks, you know, like,
yeah. and so what we left is, now we've got the prove it off season. This is the prove it off season. They were bad. They look like they've got the players and people in place. Now they've got to perform. And with that, we will end of this show, this edition of the Rise of Syria podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk of episode 504. We have more shows to come. We will drop another show. We're recording on Wednesday, so I'm going to drop this show here in just a few minutes. I'm going to cut it and get it published because we recorded a day later. As you can hear, Seth doesn't sound quite like Seth normally does, but we have more content over the next several weeks, you know, grading our team awards and things like that. So we have those in the shows to come. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening as always, and we'll be back again soon.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.